Ebenezer Scrooge! Come in!
It was Scrooge's own room. There was no doubt about that. But it had undergone a surprising transformation. The walls and ceiling were so hung with living green that it looked a perfect grove, from every part of which bright gleaming berries glistened. The crisp leaves of holly, mistletoe, and ivy reflected back the light, as if so many little mirrors had been scattered there. And such a mighty blaze went roaring up the chimney, as that dull petrification of a hearth had never known in Scrooge's time, or Marley's, or for many and many a winter season gone. Heaped up on the floor, to form a kind of throne, were turkeys, geese, game, poultry, brawn, great joints of meat, suckling pigs, long wreaths of sausages, mince pies, plum puddings, barrels of oysters, red-hot chestnuts, cherry-cheeked apples, juicy oranges, luscious pears, immense twelfth cakes, and seething bowls of punch that made the chamber dim with their delicious steam. In easy state upon this couch, there sat a jolly giant, glorious to see, who bore a glowing torch in a shape not unlike Plenty's horn, and held it up high, high up, to shed its light on Scrooge as he came peeping round the door.
"Come in! Come in and know me better, man! I am the ghost of Christmas present. Look upon me!"
Scrooge reverently did so. The spirit was clothed in one simple green robe, bordered with white fur. Its feet were bare, and on its head it wore no other covering than a holly wreath set with shining icicles.
"You've never seen the likes of me before?"
"Never."
"Have you never walked forth with my brothers?"
"I am afraid I have not. Have you many brothers, spirit?"
"More than 1,800.
A tremendous family to provide for. Spirit, conduct me where you will. I went forth last night on compulsion, and I learned a lesson which is working now. Tonight, if you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it."
"Touch my robe."
"What?"
"Touch my robe!"
Scrooge did as he was told and held fast. The room vanished instantly. They flew over London, seeing the many dwellings and churches and grocers pass beneath them.
"Is there a particular flavor in what you sprinkle from your torch?"
"There is. My own."
"Would it apply to any kind of dinner on this day?"
"To any kind one given. To a poor one most."
"Why a poor one most?"
"Because it needs it most. There. Look there."
And perhaps it was the pleasure the good spirit had in showing off this power of his, or else it was his own kind, generous, hearty nature and his sympathy with all poor men that led him straight to Scrooge's clerks. For there he went and took Scrooge with him, holding to his robe. And on the threshold of the door, the spirit smiled and stopped to bless Bob Cratchit's dwelling with the sprinkling of his torch. Mrs. Cratchit, dressed out but poorly in a twice-turned gown, set the table for Christmas dinner. She was accompanied by four children who were busy at work helping their mother.
"What has ever kept your father, then, and your brother, Tiny Tim?"
"Here they come, mother."
In came Bob, with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. The poor boy bore a little crutch and had his limbs supported by an iron frame.
"Father, you're
father,
home,
I saw the
you're
goose.
Home.
Peter
brought
father,
the goose
home.
Come
on,
father,
settle
father,
down,
home.
Children."
"And how did Tim behave in church, dear?"
"As good as gold and better. Somehow he gets thoughtful, sitting by himself so much, that he thinks the strangest things you ever heard. He told me, coming home, that he hoped the people saw him in church because he was a cripple. And it might be pleasant for them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see."
"Oh, Bob."
Peter, why don't you go fetch the goose? I dare say it'll fly away if we don't eat it soon."
"Yes, father."
And with that, the Cratchits sat down to their meal. To a man like Scrooge, the dinner may have looked measly. To the Cratchits, It was a true feast. Bob even declared that there never was such a goose cooked. After supper, Mrs. Cratchit brought out the Christmas pudding, which seemed small for such a large family, but it would serve.
A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us.
God bless us. God bless us. Everyone.
Spirit, tell me, will Tiny Tim live?
I see a vacant seat in the poor chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows go unaltered by the future, the child will die.
No, kind spirit, say he will be spared.
If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, none other of my race will find him here. What then?
If he'd better do it and decrease the surplus population.
Oh, man. If man you be at heart not adamant, forbear that wicked cant until you have discovered what the surplus is and where it is. Will you decide what men shall live, what men shall die? It may be that in the sight of heaven you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions like this poor man's child. Oh, God. To hear the insect on the leaf pronouncing on the too much life among his hungry brothers in the dust.
And before Scrooge could even blink, the small home of his clerk vanished in the night, and Scrooge saw around him a lavish chamber. Men and women in fine coats and dresses sat around a large fireplace, laughing uproariously at a young man whom Scrooge recognized to be his nephew, Fred.
And then he said that Christmas was a humbug, as I live, and he believed it too. Ah, he's a comical old fellow. That's the truth of it, not so pleasant as he might be. However, his offenses carry their own punishment, and I have nothing to say against him. He has given us plenty of merriment, and it would be ungrateful not to drink to his health. Here is a glass of mulled wine to ready our hand at the moment. To Uncle Scrooge, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to the old man, whatever he is. He wouldn't take it from me, but may he have it nevertheless. Uncle Scrooge.
Uncle Scrooge had imperceptibly become so gay and light of heart that he would have pledged the unconscious company in return and thanked them in an inaudible speech, if the ghost had given him time. But the whole scene passed off in the breath of the last words spoken by his nephew, and he and the spirit were again among their travels. Much they saw, and far they went, and many homes they visited, and always with a happy end. The spirits stood beside sick beds, and they were cheerful. On foreign lands, and they were close at home by struggling men, and they were patient in their greater hope by poverty. And it was rich in almshouse, hospital, in jail, in misery's every refuge, where vain man, in his little brief authority, had not made fast the door and barred the spirit out. He left his blessing and taught Scrooge his precepts.
My life upon this globe is very brief. It ends tonight.
Spirit, forgive me if I am not justified in what I ask, but I see something strange and not belonging to yourself protruding from your skirts. Is it a foot or a claw?
It might be a claw for the flesh there is upon it. Look here.
From the foldings of its robe, it brought two children. Wretched, abject, frightful, hideous, miserable. They knelt down at its feet and clung upon the outside of the garment.
Spirit, are they yours?
They are man's. And they cling to me, appealing to their fathers. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware them both, and all of their degree, but most of all, beware this boy, for on his brow I see that written which is doom, unless the writing be erased.
Have they no refuge?
Are there no prisons?
Are there no workhouses
still in operation?
Scrooge looked around him for the ghost, and saw it not. As the last stroke ceased to vibrate, he remembered the prediction of old Jacob Marley, and lifting his eyes, beheld a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground toward him. The phantom slowly, gravely, silently approached. When it came near him, Scrooge bent down upon his knee, for in the very air through which this spirit moved, it seemed to scatter gloom and mystery. It was shrouded in a deep black garment, which concealed its head, its face, its form, and left nothing of it visible, save one outstretched hand. But for this, it would have been difficult to detach its figure from the night. Scrooge felt that it was tall and stately when it came beside him, and that its mysterious presence filled him with a solemn dread. He knew no more, for the spirit neither spoke nor moved.
Am I in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come? You are about to show me shadows of things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. Is that so, spirit?
Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any specter I have seen. But as I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company, and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me?
Very well. Lead on. The night is waning fast, and it is precious time to me, I know. Lead on, spirit.
Good day to you, Joe!
Mrs. Dilber. Come into the parlor there, come into the parlor. So, the old man's finally died, has he? When?
Last night!
Blimey. Thought the old bugger'd never die. What's he done with his money, then?
Haven't heard. Hasn't left it to me, that's all I know.
So, what have you brought me, love?
Ah, got his bed curtains, I have.
His bed curtains? You don't mean to say you took him down, rings and all, with him lying there.
Why not? He won't be needing them anymore.
Spirit, who is it they speak of with such cruelty and mirth in his death?
You know, I wouldn't be at all sure if I wasn't his most particular friend.
How's that, Joe?
Because he stopped and spoke to me on the street once as I passed.
or sail all over the town.
Spirit, I see. The case of this unhappy man might be my own. My life tends that way now. Merciful heaven, please, spirit, show me some tenderness connected with death.
The shop vanished, and they entered poor Bob Cratchit's house, the dwelling he had visited before, and found the mother and children seated round the fire. Quiet. Very quiet. The noisy little Cratchits were as still as statues in one corner, and sat looking up at Peter, who had a book before him. The mother and her daughters were engaged in sewing, but surely they were very quiet.
Oh, there's your father now. But, spirit, where is Tiny Tim? No.
Oh, Robert.
You went today, then?
Yes, my dear. I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. But you'll see it often. I promised I would walk there of a Sunday. My little child. My little child.
Father.
Promise me, children, that however and wherever we part from one another, I am sure we shall none of us forget poor Tiny Tim, shall we? Or this first parting there was between us.
Never, father.
And I know, my dears, that when we recollect how patient and mild he was, although he was a little child, we shall not quarrel easily among ourselves and forget poor Tiny Tim in doing it.
And once again, the scene of the Cratchit family vanished. Scrooge's head spun as he tried to make sense of the visions. Finally, the newest scene became clear. A churchyard. He was standing in front of a solitary gravestone.
Spectre, something informs me that our parting moment is at hand. I know it, but I know not how. Tell me what man that was whom we saw lying dead. Before I draw nearer to that gravestone, answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be? Or the things that may be only?
Ebenezer Scrooge. I am that unhappy man deceased. No, no, spirit, please, hear me. I am not the man that I was. I will not be the man that I must have been for this intercourse. Why show me this if I am past all hope? I swear it, spirit, I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone.
My bedpost. My room. The bed curtains, they are not torn down. I don't know what to do. I am light as a feather. I am happy as an angel. I am merry as a schoolboy. I don't even know what day of the month it is. I don't know how long I've been among the spirits.
Boy!
You there, young lad, down there by the gate. What's today?
Eh?
What's today, my fine fellow?
Today? Why, Christmas Day.
Christmas Day? I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. Oh, I say, boy, do you know the poulterers in the next street?
I should hope so.
There is a prize turkey hanging there. One as big as you, I dare say. Go and buy it, and tell them to bring it here that I might give them direction of where to take it. Be back in less than 5 minutes, and I'll give you half a crown.
Ooh-wee.
Scrooge had the turkey sent to Bob Cratchit's home and giggled with glee at the thought of Bob's surprise. The bird was easily twice the size of Tiny Tim. He dressed himself in all his best and at last got out into the streets. The people were by this time pouring forth, as he had seen them with the Ghost of Christmas Present, and walking with his hands behind him, Scrooge regarded everyone with a delighted smile. He made his way to the home of his nephew and was welcomed in with open arms. He laughed along with the rest of them and delighted in the revelry. But he was early at the office the next morning. Oh, he was early there. If he could only be there first and catch Bob Cratchit coming late, that was the thing he had set his heart upon.
Cratchit, what do you mean coming here at this time of day?
I'm so sorry, sir. It will not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday. You see, a turkey was delivered to our home.
Drunk, and I see, eh, Cratchit? Well, I'll not stand for this any longer. I have no choice
but to raise your salary.
No, sir, please, I beg of you, sir.
What?
A Merry Christmas, Bob. A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year.
I will raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family. And we will discuss your affairs this afternoon. Make up the fires and buy another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit.
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all, and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh, and little heeded them, for he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good at which some people did not have their fill of laughter in the outset. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins as have the malady in less attractive forms. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He had no further intercourse with the spirits, but he lived upon the total abstinence principle ever afterwards. And it was always said of Scrooge that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that truly be said of us, and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.